Hello and welcome to the Europeans podcast. I'm Dominic Kramer in Amsterdam, and today I'm joined by our producer, Wojciech Oleksiak from Poland. Hi, Wojciech.
Hi there.
How's life over there?
So it's been really interesting, mostly because everybody now is watching the parliament discussions, which is something unheard of because nobody paid any attention to this for the last 8 years. So now the former TV star is the Speaker of the House, and he's just making such a show out of it. The way in which he goes after the former government is just hilarious. It's like very nice, but like very on point. And everybody's loving it. And the funniest fact is that the Parliament YouTube channel just reached, I think, 350,000 subs. And they got the silver button and everybody was so excited about it. It's so funny. But I'm loving it. It's like, you know, democracy back again.
Wow. Democracy as political entertainment. It sounds absolutely great. I'm glad you're enjoying it. And I'm glad you're able to watch parliamentary debates with some hope these days in Poland.
Yeah, it's also like such a nice contrast to what it was before. I don't know anybody who watched parliament discussions before. And now like everybody's like, oh, I wish I could watch more, but I have to work.
What a turnaround.
Yeah.
Anyway, I believe we're going to be talking a bit more about Polish politics a bit later on in the show. But you've brought some guests with you today, right? Can you tell us why you've brought some people together and what we're going to be doing today?
Yes, so we actually started working on this episode when things in Poland were looking much more grim. And that was before the recent election. You probably heard of how our media was turned into a propaganda tool. And also you might have heard of what happened in Hungary, where Orbán's pretty much took over the media, or, you know, the questions around who owns what in Bulgaria's media.
We've talked about most of those things at one point or another on this podcast that we've been making for more than half a decade.
Half a decade. Oh, that's a very grandiose way of putting it.
Thank you.
But there is something that I don't think gets talked about nearly enough. And this is how people in power in all the three countries we're discussing today have used local media for quite disturbing purposes.
Yeah, it's true that we hear about the national media, but local media, I've not heard so much about that.
Right, and that's interesting because, to be very honest with you, I knew almost nothing about the condition of local media. And then one day in 2021, in the middle of Poland being ruled by a populist far-right government, I woke up to the news that they had essentially taken over it all.
What, the government had taken over all of the local media?
Yeah, like all of it. And it really struck me.
How does that happen?
I had no idea you can suddenly be in control of the entire media market. So I started digging. And what I learned was that the Polish populists weren't the only ones who attacked local media in Central Europe. And that local media had a role far more important than I had realized. So, you know, it suddenly became this big story in my head.
Well, as of today, it's not going to be only a big story in your head, but also a big story in the heads of everyone listening.
Yeah, I do hope so. And I can't wait to share this story with you. And because I couldn't tell the story on my own, I called some friends from around the region and invited them to help me with the investigation and tell the story today. That's why we have Victoria here.
Hi, Victoria.
Hi, everyone. I'm Victoria Schedult from Hungary. I work for HVG, one of the last independent media outlets in Hungary. And this is a place where we call each other shipwrecks, jokingly.
Why do you call each other shipwrecks?
Well, it basically only means that we come from newspapers and media outlets that have been either shut down or taken over by the government.
Oh, that's such a cool name you found out there in Hungary.
The dark Hungarian humor is coming through already, Victoria.
Yes, we do have that here.
Turns out I'm a shipwreck too. And yes, yeah, so we have Dimitar. So now I'm wondering, are you a shipwreck too, Dimitar?
Hello, I'm Dimitar Ganev from Sofia, Bulgaria. Yeah, I can say I was sort of a shipwreck years ago. At the moment, I work for Deutsche Welle, so it's a rather comfortable position. However, the situation around me is troublesome in the media sector in my country.
Both Victoria and Dimitar fight every day for the ability to hold those in power to account in countries where that has become incredibly difficult. And they've witnessed firsthand the problems we're going to talk about.
So between the three of you, we've got a representative from Poland, Hungary, and Bulgaria, right?
Right. And we'll try to unpack this whole thing for you over two episodes. You can think of it as this kind of how-to podcast. We'll show you how, even within a democratic system, a ruling party can manipulate, obstruct, and even nearly erase a country's local media. Because it's a tried and tested Central and European blueprint, by the end of this episode, you'll be much better equipped to become an autocrat back in your home country.
Great. I'm taking notes. Can we start with a quick history reminder? So there were peaceful revolutions at the end of the 1980s in these three countries, right? In Poland, Hungary, and Bulgaria. But before that, they were all behind the Iron Curtain. And I imagine that had quite an influence on their journalism.
Yeah, every media outlet was de facto controlled and financed by the party, the Communist Party. There was no independent journalism whatsoever. And for real news, you had to turn to underground newspapers or the likes of Radio Free Europe, but that was illegal.
Radio Free Europe was illegal?
Yeah, that was illegal. And for example, in 1950s, you could even go to jail for listening to it.
Whoa.
And the communist media, for someone who's never experienced it firsthand, it can be hard to imagine, but they presented reality in a completely distorted way, borderline religiously praising those in power, and brutally going after anyone who dared to oppose. And they would always look for an external enemy, an existential threat that only the communist regime was capable of saving its people from, like the imminent invasion of Western imperialism, that sort of thing.
Reminds me of how the far right are working in Europe right now. Do you remember any of it yourself?
Yes and no. I was too young when it was actually happening, but I have since seen hours of footage. And something that is like really stuck in my mind is those people who were saying things they knew weren't true with straight faces and the tone of their voice. And then my parents would talk about it a lot, and there was always this massive anger around it all. And this was all because during communist times, the media was used to control people. In a free democracy, when media is working well, it is a tool to keep those in power in check, and it's an incentive for them to do better. But back then, all there was the voice of the Communist Party.
I was privileged to grow up in a country where the press is more or less free, where people can write what they want to about the people in power. And that meant that I didn't really worry about the freedom of the press so much when I was growing up. But listening to you talk, it reminds me that when press freedom is gone, it's very scary.
I grew up in the 90s in Poland, and I took it for granted too, only to find myself in a completely different reality one day. So, today's story is about what has happened to democracies right here in Europe, where a properly functioning free media no longer exists. Back to our quick history lesson. Between 1989 and 1990, communist rule and the whole system vanished.
That must have been a crazy thing to live through in all kinds of ways.
My craziest memories are from the 90s, so I tell you.
Yeah, I can imagine. And I guess it was also a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for anyone who might be interested in getting involved in the media.
Media is a wide-open space again, for the first time in like 50 years. You're free to start a private outlet and form whatever opinions you want. And in general, the whole media market is just buzzing. Some people are kicking off new ventures, others are seizing control of former state-owned outlets, but most importantly, there's this massive influx of capital from Western Europe. I mean that the wealthy media conglomerates were snatching up media outlets like there was no tomorrow.
Sounds like a wild ride.
It was the perfect playground for savvy businessmen to rake in big profits. So what it led to was a massive consolidation of media outlets into the hands of a very limited number of Western corporations. Poland is a standout example. By the end of the 90s, about 90% of Poland's local media outlets was in the hands of just two companies, a German and the Norwegian one.
Okay, so not exactly the pluralistic media dream that I was perhaps imagining.
It wasn't perfect, but...
Co było niezwykle ważne, powtarzam to zawsze, nigdy. What was exceptionally important, and I always emphasize this, is that the German owners never ever interfered with what was in our newspaper.
And what they were after was profit, plain and simple. You've just heard from Marek Twaruk, the former editor-in-chief of a local newspaper in Katowice called Dziennik Zachodni, Polish for the Western Daily. It was owned by the German media group during most of his tenure.
Oni byli biznesmenami. Oni rzeczywiście wymagali, żeby to... They were businessmen and they indeed demanded that the company be profitable because that's why they had invested in it. Nie dyskutowaliśmy o tym, co w tej gazecie jest.
But over time, things started shifting. In the mid-2000s, the financial crisis struck. Digital media burst onto the scene and traditional media no longer pulled in the profits their owners were banking on. Enter new buyers.
Now, these buyers were not always in for the profit. They were after influence. And then 2010 rolls around and into power walks Viktor Orbán with a chip on his shoulder. He had faced several election defeats in Hungary before that year, reportedly laying a lot of blame on the unruly media. So here's Ágnes Urbán, an expert from Mérték Media Monitor, an organization that analyzes changes in the Hungarian media system.
2010 was an emblematic date in Hungary because it was an election year and Orbán came back to the power.
A mai napon Magyarország polgárai leadták a szavazatukat.
So practically it was the start of the Orbán system. And from the media point of view, it was even more important because it reshaped and restructured the Hungarian media system.
So Orbán, he took quick and decisive actions to secure his influence on the media market. First, he decided to enact a new constitution.
What, a whole new constitution?
Yes. They'd won the 2010 election by a landslide. They now had the two-thirds majority in parliament, which meant they had the power to change the constitution.
The new changes, in general, weakened Hungary's legal safeguards for media freedom, paving the way for Orbán to reshape the media landscape. Let's hear from Dr. Anna Wojcik, an expert on the rule of law at Germany's Max Planck Institute.
Viktor Orbán has definitely decided to centralize oversight of media and in all countries that are undergoing deep structural issues with media freedom, it's really important to have hold on media regulators.
What do these media regulators actually do?
Well, these are institutions that are elected by parliament and the head of state, and they give licenses for broadcasting.
So on the flip side, they can shut down any outlet they don't like.
Yeah, that's true. They also keep an eye on the media market in general, like whether the outlets are operating in line with legal or journalistic standards. So they can also fine media outlets for misbehaving. And Orbán, he totally subjected them under his control.
As with basically all elements of his regime, he decided to appoint his loyalists to the institutions, make very long mandates of members of all those institutions that deal with media freedom.
These illiberal regimes could and should have appointed independent experts with various backgrounds to work in such institutions, but instead they crammed it with people who are active and loyal politicians.
And Anna told us that Orbán also did that with many other regulatory institutions in Hungary, such as those that keep the courts impartial and protect competition. All this led to Orbán and his party Fidesz having full control over state media, and they pretty quickly started turning it into a propaganda tool, a lot like the state media from the communist era.
And what happened in Hungary is almost precisely what later happened in Poland when Law and Justice, also known as PIS, came to power in 2015. They didn't have enough parliamentary seats to change the constitution, but right off the bat, they crammed all the necessary regulatory institutions with their allies. And one of the first bodies they did that to was the National Broadcasting Council. This allowed Polish national television to be changed drastically in hardly any time at all.
PIS made it a very much ideological TV.
¶¶
Plus, over the years, it started using it really to distort the truth. This happened fast because they just changed people who work in the media.
There were massive layoffs and departures across public media, from TV through the press agency to radio.
And I wouldn't say that people who worked there under PIS are journalists, they are rather media workers or propagandists who just execute the political narrative of the party.
Communist-style news was back.
In a country that is supposedly a democracy, pretty ironic.
What they presented was very one-sided. It was always very positive to the Law and Justice Party, to President Duda, and it was always negative to the opposition, mainly to the civic platform. They were derided and they were basically made into this evil party that is increasingly presented as being hostile to Polish interests.
It sounds a bit like that old communist tactic you mentioned earlier of creating an enemy that the government's going to save everyone from.
Mm-hmm. Big time.
It's a TV that is also presenting foreign coverage in a very biased way, always focusing on the perceived threat from the outside, including from the European Union, focusing on internal and external threats to create this atmosphere that Poland is under siege of various powers, influences, and that is really powerful in a sense that only PIS party can provide you with security.
And the language they used, the style of narration, it was absolutely unbearable, as if they were talking to a very under-informed, under-educated person that needs to be schooled about pretty much everything. And all of this started just a couple of years ago in two countries belonging to the European Union.
This must have been a very weird thing for you all to experience.
It was so enraging. The first few months we watched it and couldn't help curse the hell out of it. It was so blatant.
Oh, I can still remember watching the first propaganda segments on state TV. We had no idea it would get worse, but it did. And many viewers got used to it, like frogs in boiling water.
Okay, but what does this all have to do with local media?
Well, soon after these new powers came in, they went after the smaller local outlets.
And why did they care about those specifically?
That was precisely the question I posed to Agnes Urban, the Hungarian media expert you heard earlier. She said that Orbán went for local media first, because he saw how useful they could be in targeting potential voters.
He is extremely popular among people living in rural areas, especially among elderly people. And it is relatively easy to close these people from information because those people who do not use internet cannot find the quality news sources.
Let's pause here for a second, as this is pivotal. The election results unequivocally show that in all three of our countries, the backbone for support of right-wing populist parties lies in the more rural segments of the population. Plus, local media outlets are not just the easiest to reach, but often the most trusted, steeped in tradition. Again, here's Marek Twaruk, the former local newspaper editor.
Gazeta Ci nie pełni rolę jedynego staroświeckiego, staromodnego kanału dystrybucji treści.
The local newspaper today does not fulfill the role of being the only old-fashioned, antiquated channel for content distribution and only way to inform people. But rather, it is a ritual. It's more like a tribute paid to tradition. That's what my father read, what my grandfather did.
This holds true even during these media takeovers. As late of 2021, a whopping 58% of Poles still expressed trust in local media, with only 14% indicating significant distrust. Now, compare that to just 36% believing in the country's national public television, with 46% outright declaring their lack of trust. It just highlights how trust is significantly higher when it comes to local media. That means that for a party wanting to stay in power long term, these outlets are very effective in targeting individual voters. Here's Anta Józing, Hungarian local journalist.
So you meet the people you write about. Our readers approach us on a daily basis. So they come here and they knock on the door. Sometimes they're very happy. Sometimes they bring us topics to write about. Sometimes they are angry. So, you know, it's a daily contact.
I think I often romanticize the ethos behind local journalism, but it appears that it wasn't always baseless.
Dziennikarz lokalny pisze o rzeczach lokalnych i filtruje to.
A local journalist writes about local matters and filters it through a good understanding of local, regional and historical identity.
Wtedy to dziennikarstwo lokalne rzeczywiście ma sens, bo ono wtedy...
That's when local journalism really makes sense, because it not only covers current affairs, investments, roadworks and similar stories, but it also touches the awareness of residents who have passed it down through generations. And that's the local journalism ethos at its best.
Wtedy to dziennikarstwo lokalne, jeśli tak na nie spojrzymy, rzeczywiście ma jakiś swój specyficzny etos.
Okay, so we've reached this crazy situation where ruling parties in these supposedly democratic countries have taken over the media, including these really important local media outlets. But I still don't quite get how we got here. In Poland and Hungary, the governments took over the media regulators, but that doesn't allow you to take over huge swathes of privately owned local media outlets, does it?
Nope. Those measures were good enough to turn a national broadcaster or radio station into a propaganda outlet, but with non-public media, it's not that straightforward. These are private entities.
That was exactly what I thought. So how did they do it?
You can simply buy them.
Oh, of course.
Although you can't purchase them yourself, I mean, as a wannabe autocrat or as a political party, but you can ask your rich friends to buy them for you.
Ah, what a gloriously easy solution if you have rich friends.
Isn't it? The first time this pattern was used was actually in Hungary. Hungary's competition authority allowed these two huge media companies, Ringi and Axel Springer, to merge on one condition, that they sell 18 local media outlets they owned to a third party. This third party ended up being one of Orbán's accomplices.
The outlets were resold a few times, but they eventually landed in the hands of a guy called Lajos Szymiczka, a media magnate and a super close ally of Orbán.
These acquisitions came with total revolutions within the newsrooms themselves. Entire teams got fired, editorial lines were completely changed, and everything quickly became subordinate to the interest of the new owners. The extent of what's happened is hard to imagine. As of today, Orbán and his acolytes are believed to control close to 500 media outlets.
What, so many.
And Hungary is not the only place where people with power have convinced their rich friends to buy media outlets. Dimitar, it seems like the Bulgarian media market is absolutely notorious for using unclear media ownership to sneakily put oligarchs in control of media outlets. Is that right?
That's absolutely right. In my country, political institutions and regulators have been exploited to allow groups of influential people to capture and to privately own a huge chunk of the media market. The main group is linked to the MRF political party on Movement for Rights and Freedoms.
Are they in power at the moment?
No, they are not. They haven't been in power for more than a decade, right?
Exactly.
Dimitar, you've mentioned in previous conversations with us that the topic of media ownership in Bulgaria is somehow linked to the US sanctions against individuals in the country. Can you explain this?
So Washington sanctioned 8 Bulgarians under the Magnitsky Act.
Just for context, the Magnitsky Act is a set of laws enacted in 2012 in the US designed to sanction individuals and entities involved in human rights abuses and corruption.
And one of the sanctioned individuals in 2021 was a guy called Delian Pevsky, a politician and the engine behind the MRF's media group, the one we just mentioned.
Okay, tell me a bit more about this guy.
He has enormous, really enormous clout throughout Bulgaria's institutions. He's a very serious oligarch, I would say. And he's expected to become the next leader of his party in February.
And what sanctions were imposed on him?
They wanted to freeze his assets, but he sold his media company 2.5 months before he was sanctioned. which critics say was actually a trick to help him and his political allies in Bulgaria keep control over the media after the US sanctions.
Aha, that's a similar trick to the one we saw in Hungary, right? Selling assets between friends or business partners to achieve a specific goal.
I should probably also note that the group Pevsky sold his media empire to was already in control of a huge media portfolio in the country, television channels and news websites, as well as Bulgaria's largest telecom company.
Wow, media and telecommunications. That sounds like a lot of money and a lot of power.
So maybe we should mention something about how these tycoons are impacting local media. Venelina Popova, who is a very good journalist from the city of Stara Zagora in central Bulgaria, had an interesting story about Pevsky. In 2021, she was questioned by the police after she wrote an article about him and his party.
That's pretty Soviet, I have to say. So she writes an article for her local paper and the next day the police knock on her door?
The fact speaks for itself, and I asked her if she knew who had instigated this investigation.
No, of course, I didn't find out anything about it. After I told the media and the public that I'd been questioned, the chief prosecutor's office announced it would conduct its own investigation. But more than 2 years later, no one has gotten back to me.
To be honest, I don't think Pevsky personally or even his party had to intervene in order for this to happen. I think that in a captured state, bureaucracy obeys the strongest political predator and it doesn't need to be instructed all of the time.
Yeah, giving me Big Brother vibes.
Yeah, and media tycoons aren't the only people putting pressure on local media outlets to say the right thing. Spas Pasov, a journalist from Varna, has seen some of the contracts that municipalities in the country have used to cripple local media.
The media outlets receiving financing in one of the municipalities had to sign contracts that explicitly stipulated they wouldn't violate the good name of the mayor and the city councillors.
So let me get this straight. The media outlets signed contracts saying you can have some money as long as you only say nice things about the authorities.
And Spas Pasov says that this is the only way some local media are able to survive financially.
With these contracts, they agreed to copy-paste the municipality's press releases. With no interpretation and no comment, they can't interfere in any way in the content that they are being given. And the bad thing is that this content is published en masse without being marked as paid.
So you've got newspapers literally printing word for word what the authorities ask them to. Isn't that the definition of propaganda?
It's awful, but also in a way, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We've spoken here mainly about Pevsky and his party MRF and the media group related to it. But our former Prime Minister Boyko Borisov's party GERB is not that different. It also very actively participated in capturing and dismantling the media.
It sounds even worse than Poland and Hungary. Because if you're unable to tell who actually owns these outlets and how they're influencing journalists, it doesn't seem like there's a clear path to fixing the situation.
Exactly. It's a completely rotten system, almost criminal. Here is how we should picture Bulgarian media being controlled. This is a huge fund with money constantly flowing in, mainly from political corruption, rigged public tenders, embezzlement of EU funds, and so on and so forth. And the media is not even the real business here. It's just a tool for stopping even more dubious money-making activities from becoming public knowledge.
this was the first part of our mini-series, An Autocrat's Guide to Destroying Local Media. Make sure to tune into the second and final episode on Monday. This episode was reported, written, and produced by
Victoria Sherdult,
Dmitry Ganev,
and me, Wojciech Oleksiak. My other duties on this one were scoring, sound design, and mixing. Editing came from Adam Zalowski and Katie Lee. Editorial support came from Kat Laszlo and Dominik Kramer, who also directed recording sessions. Special thanks to all the people who spent time talking to us: Vesislava Antonova, Erwin Gut, Antal Jusing, Susanna Nowicka, Venelina Popova, Dr. Anna Wójcik, Spas Spasov, Marek Twaruk, Agnes Urban, and Cezary Węgliński. Finally, none of this would have been possible without the generous funding of Journalism Fund Europe, Alliance Foundation, and of course our lovely Patreon supporters. Thank you for helping keep one of the only independent podcasts about Europe going.